And joining us for the second half of the show is Rachel Hebert, Executive Director of STAR, that's Sexual Trauma Awareness and Response. Such a huge need for the services that this very worthy organization provides in this community, in this state, and everywhere. Rachel, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Stephanie.
I hear your voice sounds good. They said your voice, that you weren't feeling well, but thank you for making the time, and you sound very good and healthy. So, you know, you all focus on human trafficking, sexual trauma, abuse. This is something that's always been around, but we hear a lot more about it today. Why is that? When did human trafficking become such a buzzword?
Well, that's a good question. So our primary focus is all sexual trauma, not just human trafficking. And, you know, our organization, we actually started in 1975 here in Baton Rouge under the district attorney's office.
Oh, I had no idea. Okay, y'all are there.
Yeah, we are. And so we started really as primarily a support to the criminal justice system, you know, as more victims started coming forward. And I think really a shift has happened within the last 10 years in our culture, where sort of the stigma of the issue has really decreased because so many people are coming forward talking about it and being comfortable saying, you know, this happened to me as a child or this happened to me, you know, on a college campus. And so really what we're seeing is an increased number of people reporting, feeling confident that they can come and talk to someone like STAR to sort of go through that healing process.
That's wonderful. What kind of services do you all provide?
All of our services that we provide are free of charge, and we do 24/7 response services. So we have a hotline. We also meet survivors at the hospital whenever they have a forensic examination. Someone sits there with them and discusses the process and sort of what they can expect, as well as provide emotional support. Wow. We also have free individual and group counseling. So for people that are moving past the trauma and wanting to get back on with their lives and recovery, we have that service free of charge. And then recently, we also actually started a legal program. So to assist survivors, not just through the criminal justice program, but also survivors that need additional support with their safety, maybe through the college reporting process. So we just initiated that about 3 years ago.
That's wonderful. And this is volunteer-based mostly?
We have a very large and committed volunteer base of about 40 people that answer our hotline and respond to victims at the hospital 24/7. But we also have a very robust staff of about 22 full-time staff. And we've had the opportunity to expand beyond Baton Rouge. We actually have an office in Alexandria and New Orleans.
Wow. Now, I started out asking you about human trafficking, because I guess that's the subject that gets all of the headlines. And I think when you hear the word human trafficking, you think of somebody tied up in the back of a, you know, 18-wheeler, bound and gagged. Is that what human trafficking looks like, or does it just mean forcing someone into prostitution?
Well, it looks like a lot of different things. And so two of the things you touched on, yes, that's definitely, I think it's been very sensationalized in the media with movies like Taken. There's been a huge amount of support for human trafficking survivors, which is excellent because it's definitely a problem. But I think what's often overlooked is what we would call domestic human trafficking or domestic sex trafficking. You know, there are citizens within our own community that are, by and large, forced into the sex trade. They're, you know, being used for money to be, I guess, prostituted to people in our own community. And I think people often overlook that because they look at, oh, the international sex trade or things like that, but it's happening in our own community.
Wow. 2975633 if you have a question for Rachel Hebert, or 877-217-5757 if you're outside the area. And Rachel, Louisiana's reported sex trafficking cases were up 25% last year. Half of those were juveniles. What is going on? Are we just getting better at reporting, or at, you know, record keeping, or are these crimes really up?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think when a lot of people see, you know, these huge increases in reports, that's just what they are, their reports. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is, you know, it's not happening more frequently. It's just that people, especially in the community, are having more trust in law enforcement that if they come forward, that they're going to be taken seriously and that the crime is going to be looked into. And, you know, 10 years ago, the words human trafficking weren't really in our lexicon. We didn't really consider that, like, what is that? What is that human trafficking? And so with more education, with more resources, we're now able to respond more quickly to those crimes. And so I think that's why you're seeing those increases.
Any idea how Baton Rouge, for instance, compares to New Orleans or Shreveport or anywhere else in Louisiana?
I don't have specifics on that, but I will tell you that what's cited most frequently is that I-10 corridor between New Orleans and Baton Rouge. It's certainly, you know, national statistics indicate that the more access to travel, especially on bigger highways, it's going to be a larger increase of human trafficking because there's more opportunity.
Wow. Now, what kind of role does the internet play in this? I mean, I can imagine that it's made it just exponentially worse for obvious reasons.
Well, it's interesting because in my opinion, you know, it's made it worse, but also easier to track. And so, you know, there are definitely a lot of chat rooms, a lot of Facebook messages that, you know, are now tools of opportunity for perpetrators, but it's also much easier for law enforcement to track. And so when you're seeing, you know, online activity increase, it certainly is presenting more, I guess, opportunity for perpetrators to find victims, to get them into the sex trade. But it's also easier for law enforcement to look on computers because that data never erases and find these people faster. So It's sort of a double-edged sword. It's easier to locate victims, but it's also easier to get the perpetrators.
I am just amazed when you just pick up the paper, and maybe I'm more in tune to it because I, like anybody in the media, gets the press releases sent, you know, to my email. But to see the number of arrests for child pornography, for child sex abuse in this state is just mind-boggling to me. And, you know, I mean, I think it's a subject that really warrants further research, you know, because it seems like an epidemic. Do you all see that? And how much do you all deal with children and youth?
That's definitely a great word to use, epidemic. That's one that we use quite frequently, especially when we're looking at childhood sexual trauma. And the most conservative estimates are that 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 7 boys will experience sexual trauma before the age of 18.
1 in 3. That's huge.
1 in 3 girls. Absolutely. And that includes a lot of different behaviors such as pornography, but also molestation, sexual abuse. And so when you're really thinking about child abuse, you know, so often, of course, our heart goes out to children, but those children also grow up to be adults. Mm-hmm. And so at STAR, we offer services not only to adolescents, but also to the adults that have experienced abuse as children and maybe haven't told anyone yet. And really, that's the bulk of our caseload when we are looking at who we're counseling and who we're providing services to, are adults that were abused as children and just didn't have any options and didn't have any way out when they were kids.
So you all help them through their trauma. Are they, once they do come out and talk about it, are they finding greater acceptance in the broader community than they would have, say, 30 or 40 years ago?
Well, that's hard to measure. I certainly think the sexual abuse is less taboo these days. We're sort of more readily able to accept it as something that's happening. But by and large, survivors report more often that when they disclose about the abuse, that they're often met with unsupportive responses. Mm-hmm. And so whether they're going to their family, whether they're going to friends, more often than not, the question is, well, did that really happen? Or maybe you're remembering it wrong, or, you know, what were you wearing, or what did you do to seduce that person? And I think as people, I think that doesn't come from a malicious place. I think we're just so confused that that could happen to someone we know.
Right.
And we often feel like, this couldn't have happened. You know, maybe you're making it up. Maybe, you know, that person that you're saying did this didn't really do it because they seem like a good person to me.
Do you all lobby for stricter penalties for perpetrators, or advocate on that end? And have we seen any changes in the law in terms of prosecutions and sentencing guidelines?
We have done a little bit of that work. We have a lead director at STAR that is heavily involved in informing the legislature of these different things. And one thing that we were noticing is there was no misdemeanor sexual battery charge. And so a lot of times when we talk about sexual assault, it's not really a legal term. Mm-hmm. Sexual assault is a wide array of things, including rape, including molestation. But sexual battery is one of those things where, for an adult, touching could have happened, but there's really no crime unless it, reached a certain threshold. So one of those things we do is help provide law enforcement with more tools, with more laws to say, well, if it didn't meet this threshold, let's make a lesser charge that you can at least charge that person with a sexual crime. And so it's on their BAP sheet, it's on their background check, so that we can make sure that these people aren't falling through the cracks.
And has that law passed?
It has. It passed a year ago.
Okay.
And so we've noticed success in that. But a lot of times, I think people don't recognize sort of the
On the line for this half hour is Rachel Hebert, Executive Director of STAR. We've been talking about problems with sexual abuse in the state, human trafficking, and the services that STAR provides to help victims. And we have quite a high number of victims here in Louisiana. And Rachel, we were talking earlier about the role the internet plays, good and bad, in this epidemic. Cyberbullying has become such a pervasive problem in our society, and things like sexting as well. I mean, how does that factor into some of the cases that you all see?
It certainly has been very tricky. So with cyberbullying, the thing that we experience most at STAR mm-hmm. is that when survivors come forward, the perpetrators or the perpetrator's family are immediately trying to bully them or discredit them on social media sites.
Really?
Yes. We've even had, people that are on the defense team of the perpetrator go through a victim's Facebook and identify her friends, message her friends, and say, hey, did you know this person is accusing so-and-so of rape?
Wow.
What do you think of that?
And this is actual defense lawyers. These aren't just like thuggish bro friends. I mean, these are right. hired attorneys of law.
Yes.
Wow.
We've had instances where defense attorneys have hired like private eyes to follow victims, to try to find anything they can about the victim that would discredit them, having, loose sexual affairs with people or things like that. So we're seeing a lot of really, really ugly and really tricky things. And unfortunately, the laws haven't caught up to protect victims. We have rape shield laws, but unfortunately, through the internet, there's just this vast opportunity for people to reach out to their friends or family and bully them.
Yeah. So what do you all advise in this situation?
Well, the good thing is at STAR, we actually have, as I mentioned, attorneys on staff, and they'll do, I don't want to disclose everything we do, but sort of look through their Facebook and teach them how to protect their privacy mm-hmm. online and do things like a privacy check. Simple things like who can Google you and what can they find.
Right.
Sort of things.
Wow. Now, of course, we live in a culture today with a president who has bragged about his sexual exploits, who has said very publicly very demeaning things about women, things that qualify as sexual abuse, and yet he was elected president of the United States, not only in spite of that, but perhaps in the minds of some because of that. And his behavior and his outlandish social media posts have not diminished at all since his election. What does this do to the whole dynamic, and to the whole national conversation?
Well, it trickled down in a couple of ways. And for STAR, the most impactful way to date that it sort of affected us is, survivors don't feel safe.
Yeah.
Survivors are seeing, our highest elected official brag about, make misogynistic statements. He's admitted non-consensual sexual touching, and they're thinking, what chance do I have to actually get justice if this person is bragging about what they did? And so it takes a lot of support, and it doesn't help that he has a lot of support, and of course he's our president, but it just sends a message to people in our community that these things are not going to be taken seriously.
Right. Have you all seen an increase in the number of, I don't know, cases since the election, or the types of crimes perhaps have gone up?
I wouldn't say that we've seen an increase in sexual assault specifically. There has been a number of increased what we would consider hate-motivated crimes, you know, like racially motivated crimes against LGBTQ people, things like that, that, of course, our president has also spoken about. And so for us, it's not necessarily the sexual assault increase, but the increased dynamics of those crimes.
Right. Just the hate, which is, I guess, what it's all about at root anyway.
Right.
Another high-profile celebrity, maybe better known even than Trump, or almost as well-known as Trump, is Bill Cosby, once a beloved figure, something of a national icon. And, you know, he was exonerated recently of some pretty heinous charges of sexual abuse. And now he's on a speaking tour advising men how not to get charged with sexual assault. Only in America, you might say, and he'll probably make a lot of money from it. But what, I mean, this only adds to the problems that you all face, I would suppose.
Oh, yes. You know, the Bill Cosby situation is just such an interesting thing for us. And it's such a lesson for us on how we collectively will deny mm-hmm. someone's perpetrator behavior because of their fame.
Yeah.
And you know, we've seen a lot of athletes, a lot of celebrities come out in the past decade or so with these sexual assault allegations, and people will rally to their support and say, no, Bill Cosby could never have done this. You know, The Cosby Show is one of my favorite shows.
I mean, right. And Dr. Huxtable. Right. I mean, how do you get that out of your head, you know?
Well, I think it's the way we reframe it is it's all part of the persona of the perpetrator. Mm-hmm. You know, many times these perpetrators are people in positions of power, whether that's, you know, power in the community or power within their household, and they will lead double lives.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
It's been intentional. But, and, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, we live in such a media-saturated world that it's hard for people to understand that Dr. Huxtable on that great 80s TV show is not the real Bill Cosby, you know?
Right. You know, and it's been over 50 women have come forward and accused Mr. Cosby of sexual assault. Many of them are now unable to bring any criminal charges against them due to the statute of limitations. And so many people came out to say, oh, they're just trying to get money. They're just trying to discredit him. When it's so frequent that victims are vilified in the media. There's no fame in being a rape victim.
I mean, I would imagine historically the victim has always been vilified. This is something sort of deep in our human nature, is it not?
Definitely. And I think it also connects to just disbelief or this fear we have in our culture of making false accusations,
mm-hmm.
especially against sexual assault. You know, people tend to believe that the rates of false reporting for rape are higher than other violent crimes. And it's just not true. You know, according to the Bureau of Justice, false reports account for only 2-6% of all rape reports in a given year.
Wow.
And that's consistent with all forms of violent crime.
Mm-hmm. But, continue.
Well, and it raises the question, why do we continue to blame victims and call those who report rape liars, even when the evidence does not support that?
You look at the visceral reaction that women, though, you know, engender in people. I mean, you look at the hatred that people had of Hillary Clinton. I mean, just real visceral hatred. And then on the other side of the spectrum, I think people hate Kellyanne Conway in the same sort of way. I mean, and women, I think, unfortunately, for whatever reason, like I was alluding to, in our human nature, I mean, we do tend to really vilify women so often, and it's so dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a clear connection to sexism.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Any woman in power or a woman that's taking back power is viewed as a threat to men in power, a threat to, you know, the traditional, the what's always been.
How many of the victims that you all deal with are boys or men? You mentioned 1 in 7 boys, I think, at the beginning, are sexually abused. Do you all see men come forward as well?
We absolutely do. Male clients are about 10% of our overall caseload.
Okay.
And we know that there are many more male victims out in our community, but they just don't feel safe to
sure.
come forward. You know, they may be in denial that what happened to them was sexual abuse. They may feel emasculated or feel that they just have to get over it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine in many ways, it's as hard as it is for women, it's even harder for men or boys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because men aren't meant to be victims.
Mm-hmm. And you all have special counselors that help them?
We're specially trained to provide any support to sexual trauma victims, and we see, you know, male, female, transgender people, and we're able to provide those services. And a lot of people ask us, you know, do you have male staff? And we have had male staff in the past, but more often than not, male survivors prefer to disclose to a female counselor. And I think that has to do with that stigma of talking with another man about what's happened to them.
Okay. Well, Rachel Hebert, thank you so much for joining us today. You all do such important work at STAR, and I know you always need volunteers. And if people need more information, they can go to your website. That's what?
It's at star.ngo.
Okay. Well, Rachel, thanks so much for being with us.